This is Xformation, brought to you by the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. I'm Will, and today, again, I am joined by my colleague, Caden.
Hey, how's it going?
So before we talk about Common Carriage and all that kind of good stuff and what's been going on in the world of tech policy, happy summer.
Happy summer.
Yeah, summer is summer.
Is today the first day of summer?
Well, when this comes out, it's the 20th. Father's Day, June 20th.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, Father's Day, right?
Thanks for reminding me.
do you give your dad a gift?
I feel like I should have had a Google alert about now, but it may have failed me.
I think that if you don't have anything now, you're pretty done for, my man.
Yeah, it's time to call in the troops, which is my sister and brother who are going to be running the stores and doing.
Do they live in Texas?
Yeah, they do. They live close.
Nice.
And usually it's me saying, hey, I bought this thing online. Will you go get it and wrap it and put a card in and sign my name for me?
Nice.
I forgot.
Okay.
That's usually what happens.
Those are great siblings. I'm not sure I'm not sure my brother would do that. I love him to death and he's great, but I'm not sure he would do that for me.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
He likes to win at these days. Is that what it is?
He loves a good competition, right? He loves a good W.
I see. Yeah. I see. That makes sense. Oh, yeah. You got to fend for yourself when it comes to gifting to parents.
It is brutal.
Don't want to lose their love, Will.
It is brutal. So Common Carriage. Let's talk about this. What's been going on? So I feel like this one, I guess, didn't really come out of the blue. I know you've been writing on this issue, but yeah. I feel like we were just gobsmacked the last couple of weeks with all of these new, like, we got this Florida law. We've got an Ohio case. We've got this new
Ohio suing in Delaware, which is weird.
Yeah. I can't wait to get into that because that's really odd to me.
I can't wait for someone to explain it to me.
why the state of Ohio would sue Google in the state of Delaware for application of
Ohio common law?
Right. That's fascinating.
Yeah. Talk about. Not a good forum for non-convenience, I think.
I thought you said good form, not good forum. I mean, I understand. I get the difference, but I'm trying to roll with the punches here. So let's talk about where this came from, really, beginning. So this is this Thomas concurrence, Justice Thomas.
Okay.
Right. And I know you've written a decent amount on this and had a little explainer of this. So first off, I want you to kind of explain to the listeners this kind of how odd it is that his concurrence even came out, right? Because it was... Yeah. So I forget what it was. So they were granting cert for something, right? And he basically mentioned, or were they denying? What was it that they were doing? Weren't they were doing something else, and he then attached the concurrence on there.
So I think they vacated the judgment is what they did, right? They granted cert just to vacate judgment in this case. And just like some quick background on the case, President Trump, or former President Trump, had blocked a few people from his Twitter account because they were causing havoc. So he blocked them, and they argued that Twitter account from the president was a public forum. And if it's a public forum, you can't really block people from interacting with you on it. And so that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, except by the time it reached the Supreme Court, President Trump was no longer president.
So and he no longer had Twitter.
yeah, he was gone. He was off of it. And so it was Biden, the first Knight First Amendment Institute, instead of Trump.
Right.
And so the court was like, well, this is an easy decision. It's no longer a case in controversy. Moot. Let's vacate this thing. So they granted cert, vacated it real quick. Two lines, just two sentences coming from the Supreme Court, sticking with tradition, not saying more than you should, because it could be interpreted a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
Except Justice Thomas was like, you know, I've done a lot of research on this now. That's not good enough.
You know.
He's
I'm not gonna hate
don't
on.
Get me wrong, he's done his homework. So he published this long concurrence going over social media platforms, and
it was like 20 pages long, right? Something like
saying
that.
For example, that they do have a First Amendment right, but that they have control of so much speech and that should be an issue. And he said that the argument that they should be regulated like common carriers or places of public accommodation is a fair argument, which is his words. Basically, he was queuing off legislators to like pass legislation like to make social media platforms and internet platforms common carriers or public accommodations and send it up to court because he'll be there to argue on behalf behind closed doors. sympathetic to the argument, which is interesting because coming from a Supreme Court justice, one of the nine most powerful justices in the United States,
he's very specific. Yeah. Yeah. Like, Hey, I will take this issue up if you give me reason to take it up. Right.
Exactly.
Which and to me is the subtlety of all of this. It's like, okay, then now you have, I mean, this has really happened in the last 3 weeks that we've seen Florida, Ohio, and now this Wicker bill come in quick succession on exactly all of these kind of similar points.
Well, my favorite one, and it's not in order, but my favorite one is this Ohio one. Because they're basically just suing to have Justice Thomas's concurrence affirmed in some kind of common law form so that it can go up the chain, like literally just the issue that Justice Thomas presented. And let's apply it to Google is what they said. Like, apply it to Google. It applies. And we don't know if it's public accommodation or common carrier or public utility. So we're just going to say all of it, put an and or statement in there and hope for the best. So this is underselling it, but that's essentially it.
This part of the Ohio complaint was really, really fascinating to me. And this is a quote that basically a corporation's services subjects those services to public utility or common carrier status when it serves a substantial part of the public in a way that makes its methods of operations a matter of public concern, welfare, and interest. So what they're basically saying, what this complaint is basically saying, is that, you know, those services, any service, effectively, any large company's services are subject to public utility or common carrier status when it is a matter of public concern, welfare, or interest. That to me is like, okay, so anything, what are the limiting factors on that, right? Like, is there anything that we could say that isn't within the public concern? Like, I mean, publicly concerned about how expensive bread's getting, right?
Yeah, and how Coca-Cola, for example.
Yeah.
Right? That's everywhere.
Yeah. I'm looking at buying a new used car right now. Used cars under the most recent CPI index went up 7%. So like, that's of public concern to me.
That's of
my welfare and interest. Should regulate secondary car prices.
Without a car, you can't travel. You got a right to travel.
Which loops us into this question of common carriage. And traditionally, you know, common carriage has been applied to these areas of transportation, right? So it's airlines, telecommunications, et cetera, et cetera. And to me, it's really interesting because most of these are carriers of a kind of a service, right? That even when you think about airlines and telecommunications and even radio, and that's a different discussion for a different day, because that's a messy law. And I think that most of that's probably wrong. But most of this was traditionally about regulation of price, right? It was about regulation of price or a quality of a service.
Right.
And
in some cases, like discrimination based on racial profiling, et cetera, right?
Yes.
Legitimate reasons for preventing discrimination.
Yes. But we're not talking about any of those things here when we're talking about Google. No. We're talking about a kind of content.
Yeah.
So this to me always has been, you know, my economist mind just goes to the fact that, okay, within those cases of airlines and telecommunications and all these other services, that naturally what you would think is just that more of these things are better, right? More airline trips are always going to be better because then consumers have access to more destinations or more points in the United States, more telecommunications, more ability to connect through a telephone service is just a higher value because you're now able to connect to, you know, somebody who's perhaps in the middle of North or South Dakota, for example. Right.
Yeah.
So all these things there's a value that's imbued in them that more is always better. But when you're talking about Google and when you're talking about Facebook, these kinds of platforms to me, and we'll put some stuff in the show notes about our own research into this, but it's pretty clear that more is not always better than, in fact, limitations.
It goes contrary to what we used to think about the internet.
Yes.
That if you connect enough people, the world will get better.
Yes.
And then we found that that's not necessarily true.
That isn't
just give a lot of people a platform to be really bad.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And which also gives spam, right? And misinformation and all of the other kind of bad content that we're talking about.
Right. And so what we've seen in response to that, to the realization that we were wrong about access to the internet's going to make the world better, just in general as a broad proposition, is a bunch of content moderation from platforms, especially when they're user generated content driven. They go in and they moderate content like child porn, they get rid of it, or things that are spam, things that aren't good for their platform in general, they get rid of it because it's not productive, it's not useful, it's just bad stuff, right?
Yeah. So looping back into this Wicker bill, right? I mean, so what would that bill do? What's the intention here?
So the Wicker bill is interesting because it blocks platforms from doing that in general. Just broadly speaking, it blocks a platform from, let me just read the text, or it prevents a platform from blocking or otherwise preventing a user or entity from accessing any lawful content, meaning you can't block someone from the platform first.
Yeah.
Any application, any service or device that does not interfere with the internet platform's functionality. So if there's like a hacker on your platform and they're messing with you, you can get rid of that. No problem. Mm-hmm. Everything else, meaning the content that they post, the kiddie porn that they throw up.
Well, that's illegal. Name it.
You've got to be very careful about what you remove, and you have to know it's illegal. You have to know it's kiddie porn first. And then you have to be like, yeah, I'm very sure it's kiddie porn. And if I get investigated or sued for this, which this act gives you, gives a right of action against platforms. If I get sued for this, I'm going to be able to back it up in court. But that's the problem. You get investigated, you get sued for every decision that's borderline.
Anything that's related to speech. Anything. And I see that happening much, much clearer, right? That I'm sorry, not speech, but everything that's related to spam. I see that the immediate action from all of this. It's probably the fact that people that are sharing stuff that is on the verge of, you know, it's like those, it's the stuff that I always get when I'm on, you know, when I'm on YouTube and I see all of these, I see these like really weird, like, you know, like Muscle Milk related ads, right? If I didn't have to see all that stuff, I would be a happier person. But if they wanted to get rid of it, then there would probably be some concern or some, you know, some sort of action by those spammers.
Yeah,
that's a really convoluted. They would say that's a really
discriminated against for something, right?
Yeah.
And really, the bill is a response to what many conservatives believe is them being censored, right? They're being taken down from the site solely based on conservative values or beliefs that they're expressing. But you know, there's a lot of pushback to that idea, and the main pushback is that it's not your conservative beliefs; it is the misinformation, like that the coronavirus is fake. Or that the election was fraudulent. And while it's important to be vigilant about those issues, if they're real, it's also important to listen to like very finely accepted facts, things that have been vetted and are true, and notice when it's just inflammatory, which is what the platforms have been taking down.
But it also makes edge cases really difficult, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the sense of, so for like the greatest example is now the lab leak theory. That was not, that could not be posted on Facebook beforehand.
Right.
And so then it's just like, well, wait a second. Like, yeah, that's like one of those cases. It's like, would it be taken down, or would Facebook have been able to, you know, would Facebook have been able to take that content down at the very, very, very beginning?
If this law was enacted?
Yeah.
So that's interesting. Like, if they did take it down, they would have had to be very sure that the lab leak theory was wrong. And the problem with that is that they don't have the resources to do so. So they just have to leave it up and just hope.
Typically,
for the best.
You know, they're going towards the CDC or the WHO, which has gotten them in other problems. Right. I'm not saying that there's anything perfect about this.
Right.
But I think that, as you've mentioned to me, this other big problem, this other, like the, you know, the 900 pound gorilla in the room is, of course, the First Amendment, which in all of these conversations, everyone talks about free speech, but this First Amendment element is almost undiscussed, right? It's as though this entire history we've had since the 1970s, especially since Tornillo, is that like none of this has really been discussed, right? This other Supreme Court precedent, and that's what's interesting to me about the Thomas concurrence, that in fact that some of those elements that we would think that would be discussed here aren't really being discussed, and he really doesn't go down that path.
In his concurrence, he had this really interesting line that regulations that might affect speech are valid if they would have been permissible at the time of the founding. And he suggests common carrier public accommodation doctrine as a way to prevent triggering heightened scrutiny, which means the burden of proof for a content regulation is way higher than if you don't trigger heightened scrutiny. Yeah. It's just, you know, a standard case. And so he says that if it's something that would have been permissible at the time of founding, you know, you wouldn't trigger the heightened scrutiny. So try these common carrier, try these public accommodation things.
And so in a previous, so just real quick, in a previous life, I actually did a lot of work on media history. You know, this is, So this is actually this is my background is originally in, you know, rhetoric and new communication, new media theory. But there was, we did a lot of work in media history. And this idea of common carriage, it was very controversial at the time, right? There was, put in some show notes also probably about some stuff that Ben Franklin had said, but, you know, there was this really controversial set of circumstances that happened basically from the 1750s onwards, all about this question of whether or not newspapers should air both sides. And Ben Franklin had said, yes, you know, you probably should because, you know, we can effectively sell more papers, which eventually was the case, you know, in the 19 teens. But what actually happened in practice is that a lot of newspapers at the time just didn't get involved in the back and forth of politics because they didn't want to make any one side or another side angry. And so they really just didn't involve themselves in this political, these political machinations. So that's the thing that's really interesting about the original, like that part of the, when you had mentioned this, you know, when we were talking about this getting ready for the podcast, when you were talking about this regarding Thomas and the concurrence, I was just thinking about this. I'm like, at the time of the founding, that was hugely controversial. There was a whole set of case law that was going along with this. And a lot of people were still kind of grappling with what even these new newspapers, what this new printed medium really, really meant in application.
Plus I think it's probably settled law. It's not completely settled law as it applies to internet platforms, but the first case that, you know, that I find persuasive is Miami Herald v. Tornillo, like you just mentioned. And that's where the court held that the Florida statute that said, if you publish something that's criticizing a candidate, you have to give them equal space and a place on your newspaper to respond. And that was challenged. And the court struck it down because they said that government enforced right of access inescapably dampens the vigor and limits the variety of public debate. So what that means is if you have a private forum, a government bill, even if it's cloaked under the guise of providing access to all people, that's government enforced rights of access, which means that the government is essentially telling you what to say, in essence, having other people come on and talk, and you can't prevent them from doing so in your space. And then in Pacific Gas and Electric Company versus the Public Utility Commission, it was not a newspaper, but a public utility who was sending out bills, and they were being required by the Public Utility Commission to insert consumer advocacy pamphlets in their monthly bills. And they challenged that in court, and the same kind of holding, where it was the government telling a public utility this time what they had to say or what was required to be in their materials. Their newsletters, their monthly billing was a private forum. And so was the Miami Herald, which is a newspaper. And Senator Wicker does a good job at excluding newspapers, at excluding traditional news media from his definition of an internet platform, because he knows that, you know, the press has great First Amendment protection. But I would argue that an internet platform has the same, right?
Yeah.
His bill is, in essence, a government-enforced right of access, which has been struck down twice now by the Supreme Court since the 1970s.
Yeah. And that it also, I mean, given that what Tornillo says about dampening the vigor of public debate, I mean, that to me is this kind of, this conflict that if you believe, and it is the case that common carriage, really the only thing that kind of unites common carriage is that it's, you know, affected with public interest. And I'm using scare, of course, because I'm still not at all sure what that means at all. Everything has public interest, and there is no singular public interest. There are only interests, right?
If really wanted to get down to it, I mean, being a legislator and providing accurate facts is affected with the public interest, right? Like that is also a thing. And there's this whole debate about what is it? Legislative malpractice. Is that what,
oh man, let's not even get into
Congressman
that.
Raskin said.
That
was a fun quote. I liked it. But no, I mean, there is a lot of stuff that could be affected with the public interest and make things, you know, quote unquote, common carriers or public utilities. But in this context, it's speech. It's not people and commodities that we're carrying, like trains and railroads, trains and planes and cars and things. It's speech and information.
Yeah.
Which is essentially different. There's this other thing where you brought this up earlier, or it's carrying versus publishing.
Yes.
Like
a
phone line carries your transmission of your phone call.
Yes.
But a platform just publishes it. It just puts it up, right?
Yes.
Or it puts
yeah.
it
up. No, no, very much so. And it's like, Facebook isn't your access point to the internet, right? Your internet service provider is your access point to the internet.
Yeah, which is why net neutrality was somewhat hard of an issue for some people to argue against for the common carrier stuff.
Yes. And that to me is, there are other elements that probably make it such that network neutrality shouldn't be applied to ISPs. I also, the reason I'm pushing back on this common carriage is that I think that you could probably do a lot of things without necessarily having some sort of common carriage requirement, right? That in fact, when we look at a lot of these common carriage requirements, there's just better means of actually getting the kind of end result that you would want,
right,
or that it doesn't get the end result that you want. I don't see, and that's where, I think that probably, at least with this conversation, when it comes to platforms, that to me is that, okay, so you get the FTC to come in and say, hey, Facebook, you have to put this kind of speech on your platform.
Mm-hmm.
Like what? Why?
How is that like, good, right?
Yeah.
And even in Thomas's concurrence, he's harking back to old British colonial times where our common law is coming from England and Britain, which is, when we're talking about speech, Britain and England is kind of not a good thing to mention because we're talking about, crown regulation of what we said.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It was the,
And then that gets me to my final point. And I think that this is probably just conjecture, but it sort of harps onto like this takings angle.
Yes.
A platform is inherently driven by content, just like a newspaper is. It's not the same, but it
derives its value from the content. It derives its value from the content. Yeah.
If you're telling a platform what it can and cannot do with that content, you're essentially taking its editorial discretion, which is its property. Its value is derived from that.
Yes.
From keeping the content relevant or engaging.
Yeah.
And if you do that, that's a 14th Amendment violation by the states, but it's a Fifth Amendment violation by the federal government. And you've got two issues. You've got the First Amendment, and then you got the Fifth Amendment. And that's a hard case to win if you're trying to support this legislation.
So your expectation is that one, I personally, at least with the Wicker bill, I see it as much more of a signaling bill than anything else, right?
I do too.
Yeah. And I think it's a signal, obviously. One, I think it's, in part, I don't know. I'm of two minds here, right? That there is clearly a tension and there's a worry that large Silicon Valley platforms aren't listening to the concerns of, of smaller players, right? That if you do have content that's taken down, it's actually really, really hard to understand why that content was taken down, under which rules it was taken down. And I get that, right? I understand that having something that at least makes it understandable, this process, this very opaque process. I get that we want to try to solve that problem. I'm not really sure how you solve that problem, practically speaking. I mean, maybe you have a transparency requirement or I don't know. I don't think there's really any huge, huge thing that you have to. Let me say it like this. There's probably more that these large platforms could do in order to ensure people understand why content is being taken down.
Yeah.
But that's separate, I think, from this issue of content moderation and just allowing anything going across the website or going across these platforms.
If content moderation isn't the solution that Justice Thomas wants, the solution is also not to allow all content broad-based. Like,
right.
That's also not the solution. And I don't think common carriage or public accommodation law, I don't think it meets in the middle anywhere. I think it goes on the edge of allowing everything. And so somewhere in the middle of that, between expanding access, being objective, like a printing press, and also moderating content and trying to make your platform better for user experiences, that's the sweet spot that no one has really been able to figure out where that's at yet. And I don't even have that answer. You don't have that answer.
I think it's different. I mean, but that I think is actually an under... that's an underappreciated part of this entire conversation as well. Content moderation for me is not the same. The most beneficial, the most optimal content moderation for me is not the same as it is for you, right? We would hope that we would get there perhaps through some sort of, you know, like algorithm. User
preference kind of deal?
Yeah, or user like, preference,
like you set your preference for certain types of content. And
yes. Which you
that's user-driven moderation technique.
Which you can all, interestingly enough, if you go and you use extensions, right? There are extensions where you can get this kind of information. You can determine what that looks like. Yeah. That's the, I mean, you know, that's maybe a different discussion and maybe an additional and
extensions
discussion.
through Google.
Like
Google,
right? Yeah, through Chrome, which right? Is through Chrome or Firefox. Yeah.
Sued for the same thing.
Yeah. Well, man, look at this. Look at this. Title, look where we're at, right? Just sue. Let's just sue everyone and see where it just turns up, right? That's what's going to make the next 5 to 10 years
straight. And let's waste tons of money in litigation because, the platforms can afford it. But, like, let's not worry about the precedent it sets that if you're a small platform, you have the risk of being sued just to figure out what the problem is by a court, right?
Yeah.
To figure out what the answer is. And that costs money, which is sort of the reason why Section 230 is the thing. To prevent those kinds of lawsuits that are just, hey, I think this could be a problem. Let's sue on it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just bankrupt you.
So probably won't get passed. I can't imagine this is going to get passed. What do you think is going to happen? So my question for you is, what do you think is going to happen to this Ohio case, this Ohio complaint? Does this just...
First off, I feel like civil procedure is going to kick in. I don't know if this is the appropriate forum, and I feel like it'll be dismissed, and they'll have to bring it again back in an Ohio court. But that... may be untrue because I did not do so well in civil procedure, but for constitutional law stuff, I think that a court will probably dismiss this as well.
Yeah.
Because there's no damages they're seeking. That's the first thing, which I guess this is civil procedure again, but they're essentially trying to have a declaratory judgment without a remedy. And while that's okay, and you can go back and get the remedy, the constitutional issue is that they're saying we want Google to produce this kind of content, and that's essentially not the job, or that's essentially an infringement of the First Amendment.
Yeah, and also this takings, right? Because you're also determining what
it could be. But I feel like that's just my legal conjecture. I'm not really sure what the credibility of that is yet. But
yeah,
I'm still looking into it.
Sounds good. To you. Well, I think that's probably it. I don't know if you got any additional things, but I think that's pretty much it for me. I mean, there's a lot that's going on here that we're obviously tracking.
Yeah, I mean, this is like in stock investing. They say during the summer, you just like hold on, right?
Hold.
It's sort of the same way with tech policy. Like you just grab both handles and you just hold on and you try to survive. Because the market and the whole thing is volatile, you know. Just
it's volatile, yeah. It's very volatile. Man, my little. Let's not talk about crypto. That's a different conversation.
Okay.
All right. On that conversation note, until later. Have a good one.
Adios. See ya.